You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our show, Aging Redefined, brought to you by Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center and VITAS Hospice. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. Dr. Emder, how are you today?
I'm great, and again, it's great to be on the show here with you today.
Yeah, I'm very excited that you're here. How was your weekend, by the way?
Oh, weekend was great. I was making a living. I actually had to work this weekend.
So, you were so you are verifying why people and our audience members can listen to you because you are regularly in practice.
You know, I feel so good. I was able to work 12 hours today to get 5 hours of sleep, and I'm here today to do the show.
Well, there you go.
I don't recommend that.
But feeling good because why? Because why?
Well, the latest iteration is I am now on the gluten-free diet.
The gluten-free diet.
For like a week, and I've lost 2 pounds.
That's impressive.
And my irritable bowel syndrome is history. Yeah. I'm feeling good. This is just after a week.
I have so much to say about that. For audience members out there that weren't paying attention to our show 2 weeks ago, we talked about being gluten-free and the book Wheat Bellies. We had a special doctor on that was giving us all the rundown on it.
Dr. Aiello
was on. Mm-hmm. And they brought up a lot of really good points for being gluten-free. And so I think you and I are both doing it. The problem is you being, we should not let this show turn into a health food show, but we are stretching or kind of pushing that nutrition is very valuable when it comes to health issues.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I mean, the issue is I'm a vegetarian, so I'm not doing any beef, I'm not doing any chicken. And now you cut out wheat, there's like not too much left to eat, but we're finding some things. Pasta's gone.
Pasta's gone. However, I was just in Whole Foods and they're talking about, I mean, there's so many like gluten-free options, right? You've got your pastas or your breads even that have gluten.
See, I wasn't aware of that. I was kind of like depressed last night at dinner and my
thinking never again.
I was thinking I got to go on, you know, an antidepressant like Paxil because there's nothing left for me to eat.
No, but
my sister-in-law, who's a lifelong vegetarian, Judy, thank you very much, told me there's a lot of gluten-free products now that are in the marketplace because the food industry realizes there's a big need and interest for this, and I got to go out and check it out for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But the only thing, and Dr. Aiello was talking about this as well, the only thing to be careful with the gluten-free is to not incorporate products or replace them with things that have like cornstarch in them or high fructose corn syrup, right?
Right. So you got to read the labels, but I'm not even there yet because I don't go shopping, so I'll have to send my wife.
You don't go shopping. I'm sure your wife really appreciates that.
Well, actually, it's been actually 2 weeks since the show, and the first week was a bust because if you want to do any dieting, I realized that if your partner isn't interested, you know, you're not going to diet. And my wife said, there's no way we're going to do another one of your crazy diets.
So, got it. Even though you're aging gracefully, like at what, 3% body fat and looking like you're 35.
Well, we're doing good. Good in that area, but you still need the support of your spouse or your significant other if you want to diet. If she says
that's so true,
it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. So it didn't happen till last week, and so far so good.
That's true. Okay. Well, at least you're moving forward. I'm doing the same. So we'll have to keep an eye out on things. And I'm going to give it at least 6 weeks. See how we go.
You're 2 weeks into this diet. How do you feel?
I'm technically 2 weeks, but I have slipped a couple times.
Oh, no.
My mom was out last weekend and, you know, you go to have breakfast and there are like popovers and
it's a killer.
Scones. And, I can't say that I was 100%, but I am pretty close.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty close. I'm not doing the whole pastas thing and.
I have
no bread.
I have something to admit. What? I had a beer, and supposedly you're not supposed to.
Oh shoot,
to have
that counts too. Okay, yeah. See, I've got a lot of problems.
We're pretty close.
You had a beer. I thought you're a red wino too.
Yeah, but you know, a good beer, you got to try it.
Yeah.
I think Dr. Ellis said beer is out. Although I did not have a wheat beer, so I had a barley beer. But I'll have to ask.
Barley gets thrown into that.
Okay, so I just had my last beer this weekend.
Yeah. Your last? That's so sad.
And that's like why the Paxil.
Rest in peace. Yeah, I know.
So what do you got new for us in the news and healthcare this week?
Oh, well, I've got a lot of great stuff. Great. I have a lot of great stuff. But before I get into it, I have to tell everybody who you are for the audience members out there that aren't paying attention. Being that you're like a big, huge big wig at Alvarado Hospital.
The chief medical officer at Alvarado Hospital, which is top 15 best hospital system in the United States.
Yeah, I saw that. You can right see here, that right off the eight, that right big
here
sign.
In, right here in San Diego. Mm-hmm. We're part of the Prime Healthcare System.
Yes.
And we run about a census of about 100 beds and all specialties. And in fact, for today's show, we have one of our physicians is the chairman of the Department of Sexual Medicine.
Ooh.
Who's going to be
with
us.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good show.
And he's one of the giants in the field. I mean, it's...
world renowned, right?
We're like right here in San Diego. So we're going to be introducing him in the second part of the show. Mm-hmm. And Alvarado has a lot of great things going on right now. It's very exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that'll... look forward to having that a little bit later on the show. So before we kick that off, though, do you want updates on what's new in medicine?
Let's do
it.
Okay,
here we go. All right, first and foremost, as a woman, I'm always trying to lose weight. However, researchers have determined that my bedtime, which is a little later than it should be, might be making it difficult for me to shed those pounds. The study, which was published in the journal Sleep, found that even if you are healthy but go to bed late, your risk of gaining weight is significantly greater than if you go to bed earlier and have a good night's sleep every night. The study was pretty intense and was actually controlled in a laboratory hospital. There were 225 people, all healthy, non-obese, and they were broken up into two groups. One group was sleeping from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m., which, gosh, how nice would that be? And one group was sleeping from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., which is about 4 hours, and I would be a mess at that point. All participants were served set meals at the same time each day and had free 24-hour access to a well-stocked kitchen. They were allowed to move around, but not to exercise. I can't even imagine how hard this study would have been. But anyway, the study found that those who slept much less consumed more food and therefore more calories compared to the normal hour sleepers. Meals eaten during the late night hours had a higher overall fat content than other meals as well. So one could say, well, the people that were up were probably burning more calories than those that were sleeping, though, right? Wrong. Their extra calorie consumption was greater than the additional calories burned. So in addition, the study went further on to say that men put on more weight than women and African Americans put on more weight than Caucasians. So interesting there.
Okay. Get your sleep. And the good news is if you're sleeping, you're not eating.
Right? I think that's the only thing that's going to keep me out of the kitchen.
Okay. Well,
yeah. So
do your 8 hours.
Okay. Continuing on our fat run here. A new study in obesity prevention found that consuming highly processed carbohydrates can cause excess hunger and stimulate brain regions involved in reward and cravings. This part of the brain is also linked to substance abuse and dependence. So basically means that when we eat certain foods, we can become addicted to them, which is so lovely. Chocolate would really fall into that for me, I think.
Chocolate is good, though.
Chocolate's really good. Well, really good chocolate, though, right? Like the 85% lint kind of stuff?
Right.
The cacao beans. In fact, you can get straight cacao beans at like Whole Foods and Jimbo's. They are very, it's like chewing on a coffee bean, though.
Okay. Right. I don't shop.
Yeah. Okay. Don't shop, right? Well, we're going to have to tell Mrs. Emder. Anyway, okay, going back. Sorry about that. To examine this idea, 12 overweight or obese men consumed test meals designed as milkshakes with the same calories, taste, and sweetness. The two milkshakes were essentially the same, but the only difference was that one contained rapidly digesting with a high glycemic index carbs, and the other was slow digesting carbs, so it had a low glycemic index. After the participants consumed the high glycemic index milkshakes, they experienced that initial surge in blood sugar levels and then a sharp crash 4 hours later. That crash led to excessive hunger and an intense activation of the critical brain region involved in addictive behaviors. So for those of you who tuned into our show on gluten and wheat, and actually diabetes for that matter, it might not be news to you out there. Because that insulin spike is what makes you hungry and creates that need to eat, right? Or that perception that we need to eat. Is that kind of what Dr. Ayala was saying too, right?
When you get up in the morning and you're hungry, that's because your insulin levels are high.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's very important to breakfast is break the fast. Is you want to bring those insulin levels down.
Right.
So they are up again around 11:30 or 12. And physiologic, the normal thing to do is have a little something to eat to bring those levels down.
Right.
And what a lot of people do that as a mistake is they skip breakfast. And or they, you know, where they have their one big meal late in the day, and they avoid their insulin spikes. And what can happen over time is you can develop something called insulin resistance, and you don't want that to happen. One way to prevent that is making sure you're having at least your three meals, break the fast in the morning, have a little something at lunch, a little something at dinner. So you want to bring those insulin levels down.
Right. And there are certain foods that can make that spike higher than it really should be, right? So like this study was suggesting limiting high glycemic index carbs like white bread and potatoes.
Right.
Could really control that and
Absolutely.
Prevent that urge to eat. So, okay. And as a last one, I've got a quickie for you. Men, close your ears. Or maybe you should be paying more attention and grab your wife. The first non-hormonal treatment for hot flashes was just approved by the FDA. And this is Brizdel. It does not contain estrogen or
progesterone.
No, there's no rone. P-R-O-G-E-S-T-I-N.
Progestin.
Progestin, yeah. That is found in other drugs that help with menopause. So maybe it's safe to say the woman won't get as moody. I don't know. Is that an assumption? Around 75% of women experience hot flashes when they enter menopause, and some do suffer from it for years. Now, I'm not one to push drugs, so it is important to note that there are other options. In a few different studies that were conducted, hypnosis was also found to minimize hot flashes by as much as 74%. And in addition, soy. Two daily servings of soy can reduce the frequency and severity of hot flashes by up to 26%.
Cool.
Interesting, right? Yeah.
Very
okay.
Good.
So, our audience members out there, stay with us. We have a great show for you today. We've got Dr. Goldstein. He's coming on talking more about sexual medicine. So everybody should perk up after that.
I'm perked up.
Is that wrong? Is that wrong to say?
I'm not too perked up.
But stay with us. And as we hear from our sponsors, VITAS Hospice, and we will be right back.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to our show, Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And we're really excited about this show today, aren't we, Dr. Emder?
We have a special guest.
We do. I'm really excited about it, though, more so than normal.
Okay.
We have Dr. Goldstein on. And
he's the director of sexual medicine at Alvarado Hospital. He's a clinical professor of surgery at the University of California, San Diego, and he practices sexual medicine in San Diego. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, well, I think most people don't know that San Diego is kind of like a hidden gem. We have some phenomenal physicians out here that are world-renowned, have books on shelves in bookstores that you walk into on a regular basis, but they're right here, so we have access to these people.
Dr. Goldstein is the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Sexual Medicine. He holds a degree also in engineering from Brown University and a medical degree from McGill University.
Wow.
He's right here in San Diego.
Yeah, and he's also sitting right next to you. So, yeah, hi, Dr. Goldstein.
Kendra and Larry, thank you. This is fabulous.
So, I guess my first question for the audience is, like, what actually is sexual medicine?
So, we get that question a lot. But, I mean, people understand what family medicine is and emergency room medicine and sort of, you know, radiology medicine or cardiology medicine. So we're just that subspecialty of the larger field of medicine that focuses on the study, the diagnosis, and the treatment of men and women who have sexual health problems. And that's an awful lot of people who have sexual health problems.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem is, you know, doctors, patients, we don't really talk about it. So it's probably out there, but it's kind of undercurrent, under everybody's radar.
So, I mean, I talk about this all the time, like, there's women who talk about breast cancer and men who talk about prostate cancer and men who talk about arthritis and men who talk about, I don't know, anything, knee and joint problems. But there's far more people than breast cancer and prostate cancer who have sexual problems. And this goes from interest issues to arousal issues to orgasm ejaculation issues to pain issues. And this affects not just you. This affects who you're with, your partner. And it makes it, you know, it's about quality of life. It's about intimacy. It's about sharing. It's about esteem and feeling confident and failure to have that. I mean, I just operated on a 43-year-old woman who had sexual pain essentially all her life. And she has no life. She lives alone and she doesn't date and she doesn't go out and she works. And she's given up all of that. And finally, we'll deal with her sexual pain problem. But, I mean, it's just a small mini example of a larger problem of people who can't enjoy their lives sexually.
Dr. Goldstein, how did this patient actually get to you? I mean, what...
I'm like her 15th doctor. But again, most of the doctors she's seen are sort of either in gynecology or primary care where, you know, she has a 7-minute opportunity to have a conversation. We only do this, and a visit with us is over 3 hours. So it's a whole different concept.
You know, the other thing that's going on is, Kendra.
I'm like, wait.
Kendra
wait,
took a deep breath and I interrupted. We're so excited to get into this conversation.
I know.
Why don't you ask your question?
Well,
women
first. My question is, and you kind of hit it on the head last time, but we do, as women, I know that we've got problems, whether they go from, you know, yeast infections or pain like endometriosis. Wow, that was hard to get out. But you do typically go to your, you know, your family practitioner and they sit down and it's like, well, here's a pill. But to get down to the nitty gritty of it, would that be something that we would go like directly to you for?
Yeah. So we have this 6,000 square foot facility. We have a station that does only sex therapy. So the psychologic component and
so like
an
counseling?
Hour with that person. Well, I mean, it's first the evaluation and counseling, would it be needed? And ideally you bring your couple. So the both members of the couple are in the office. Mm-hmm. We have a station which musculoskeletal evaluation, so pelvic floor physical therapy. It's a, you know, if you have orthopedic issues or back issues or neck issues or specifically muscles around
the pelvis. Wow, yeah, area, all related.
You get that station. And then we do the hormonal, blood flow, neurologic, drug, biologic sort of thing. So a person is overwhelmed, which is fabulous, but all in one visit gets these component parts of a human's sexual life. The key to any part of medicine is getting a diagnosis. It seems so simple. You know, you have chest pain and you go to see Dr. Emdur and he's going to say, well, you may have pneumonia, you may have an esophageal problem, you may have cardiac blood flow problems like angina, you may have arthritis problem of the ribs in your chest, but I need a diagnosis before I treat you. You go to a sexual health problem, they say, here's this pill or here's this treatment or come back and have a glass of wine.
It's not always a pill that's going to help you.
But my point is there's no context to give a person a diagnosis, find out what is wrong. Is it musculoskeletal? Is it psychologic? Is it biologic? Is it neurologic and hormonal? Is it neurologic, hormonal, and anatomic? I mean, whatever it ends up being, one needs a diagnosis. It's a fundamental way to manage a medical problem.
You know, the other issue is we have an aging population, a lot of baby boomers, which I'm one of, and, you know, we don't want to age. We want to be young.
Young
be
forever.
Vibrant. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, aging redefined.
Aging redefined. That is what we're doing. That's why you're here, to help redefine our aging population.
So does sexual medicine help the baby boomer population?
I have to tell you, I'll answer the question with an example. I had a woman walk in the office 4 years ago at age 70. She has not yet had her orgasm. Okay, and she walked in the office.
Like one ever?
Never. And she looked fabulous. She had all the plastic surgery. She did not look 70, and she was dating. And we did our evaluation, the three-station evaluation. We started her on various treatments, and then they were not successful, and she kept coming back, and they were not successful. She's 4 years later, age 74. She walks in the office. She's having regular orgasmic sexual function. And she said to me, tell your patients, do not give up. I'm that example.
Wow.
Yeah. So we finally found the connection and combination that worked with her. And it was, I mean, I can tell you what it is, but the point is, it's just a matter of, we focus on that part of medicine, which is sexual. Mm-hmm. And we will not give up. We do not give up on people.
So you're saying age doesn't matter either, right? I think when people get to a certain point, it's like, well, I'm older and I just kind of throw that out the window now.
But you know, aging people run marathons now. They dance through the night.
No,
they take
kidding.
Cruises. They're not like the generation of, like, my grandfather was in a rocking chair at age 60 and they didn't do hardly anything. But that's very different now. So I think part of being alive and awake and sharing and being mm-hmm. intimate is being sexual. I mean, Viagra sort of has changed the paradigm. Mm-hmm. Men can have erections going on into aging. And it's so weird. There are more women with sexual problems than men. There are over 20 FDA products to help men with their sexual issues, and there's not a single product for women.
Didn't you say that might be changing?
Well, that will definitely change. 2013 in our office is the year of the woman. So we're all
rock star.
Yeah. 2013 this fall should be the year when women will have their first drug available. Not that everybody needs a drug, but at least it will open the conversation. You'll see advertising on TV. You'll, mm-hmm. I mean, what this drug will do is what Viagra did to the world of erectile dysfunction. Can you imagine at a golfing club, people talking about sexual medicine? I mean, it never happened before. And now at golfing clubs, you hear it all the time. Oh, did you use Viagra? I had a great time with Viagra, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, you go to a football, mm-hmm. get the Super Bowl. There's ads for Cialis. There's ads for Viagra. I mean,
yeah, very true.
It's out there, but it's not for women yet.
Right. Okay.
I actually have a question about the previous patient you described,
sure.
who is age 70, never had an orgasm. How important is it for a woman to have an orgasm?
We'll have to ask Kendra that question. But I mean, how could you?
It's sort of like, I mean, I'm a guy. I can't.
It's sort of like saying, how would you like to have? You were talking about your gluten diet. How'd you like to have no taste? You know, your body has no taste, and you're saying, well, you eat. Okay, so it's, you know, describe the beauty of a sexual experience that begins with sharing and ends with this fabulous orgasmic response. But you can't share in that. And how does your partner relate to you? And how, I mean, it's so unbelievable important for all human beings to have a satisfactory sex life. Now, you could have no orgasm sex life and be satisfied, but for those people who are not satisfied, like she was, she said, I will find someone to get me this thing.
So I guess for our audience, women that have stopped having orgasms, there's a treatment out there. There's the area of sexual medicine, and you know, you don't have to give up on this part of your life, this part of your body.
You know, I would think that, and not to try to answer that question at all, but as you were saying, Dr. Goldstein, it can be very psychological as well.
Sure.
And when it comes to having an orgasm, it's more of being able to connect with somebody. And as you see, even as you're aging, we don't lose that need to connect with somebody, right? So you see, you know, even in skilled nursing facilities, you know, you still get those patients that are yearning for their family to come and visit, or even, you know, they might, and I use the word hook up, not in a way that they're actually, you know, hooking up sexually or physically or whatever, but
emotionally.
We have some, you know, men in our skilled nursing facility that find other women in the skilled nursing facility and they have lunch together every day. And
it
just becomes like a companionship kind of thing. And the more, you know, if you do connect with somebody on that intimate level, it like takes it one step further to be able to connect through an orgasm, you know, that kind of thing.
So part of being alive is sharing,
mm-hmm.
and you've just described that.
Right.
But sexuality is a hugely important part of sharing, and it's so frustrating when you have this problem and you go see your local healthcare provider and they dismiss it, or they don't understand it, they don't send it on, they don't evaluate it, they don't respect you having it, and they dismiss mm-hmm. you. And it's worse than that.
I think the problem being, doing some primary care is it's such a complicated area of medicine,
right?
Because it could be a medical issue, it could be a physical structural issue,
right.
It could be a psychological issue, and you know, the primary care doctors aren't really trained to deal with all those aspects of sexuality. And that's why having a sexual medicine expert in San Diego is huge.
So this is a dream for me, because I tried to do this in a medical school in another city, and the dilemma is it really needs to be its own entity. Alvarado Hospital has sexual medicine as a unique independent discipline. You can see here is my name.
Yeah, do I see? Medicine. Yep, I see.
Whereas Scripps doesn't have that, Sharp doesn't have that, UCSD doesn't have that, UCLA doesn't have it, Harvard doesn't have it, any. Princeton doesn't have it. There's not a single facility, so it needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. And there's so much, I mean, we can go into depth about this subject for so much longer, but for our audience members out there, stay with us because we do have more to talk about, and we will be right back.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right. I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, we'll check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com, or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And our special guest today is Dr. Goldstein, and we're talking about sexual medicine. We've got so many questions here. I don't even know where to start.
I have a big question.
Okay, Dr. Emder.
We see it advertised on TV all the time, testosterone replacement therapy. It's now part of our general nomenclature. So I guess my first question to Dr. Goldstein is, what is this testosterone and what's it all about? How important is it as a treatment?
So testosterone is a hormone made by the gonad, and it's made by both men and women, and it's an essential hormone for multiple areas, for bone health, for muscle health, for metabolism of fat, for blood vessel health, for blood pressure health, for cholesterol health, and of course for sexual health. So testosterone is very important. In women, after age 30, testosterone falls linearly with age. So the testosterone menopause precedes the estrogen menopause by over 20 years. For men after age 40, the testosterone falls linearly, but the binding protein, the use of testosterone has to be in a form that's not bound, and the binding protein, sadly in men, increases exponentially with age after age 40. So you get the double whammy. You make less and you bind more. So you have less unbound testosterone available to you. So at the end of the day, I guess the simplest way to think of all this is our bodies were designed to be around for to us till the egg sort of went in a woman, roughly the ages of 40s. And we weren't supposed to be around in our aging redefined world after 50 and 60 and 70 and 80. And now we're living
we're here.
70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision, we do not want to pathologize aging, but we want to maximize our benefits and minimize our risks during aging. And to achieve that, it is really essential to have a hormonal health component to your aging paradigm.
Someone had a low test, a male had a low testosterone level, what would his symptoms be?
So the classic symptoms are can't hit the golf ball as far, can't run with as much energy as he did, can't perform sort of physical things. Falling asleep right after meals is a very classic thing. It's a very embarrassing thing. You sit in a chair and you are gone. You have an abdominal belly. We call that metabolic syndrome, where your waist circumference is over 40 inches, and then you combine it with hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes. Those are all low testosterone issues.
Wow.
The classic low testosterone issues, of course, low interest, poor erections, less ability to have orgasm. We talked in the past of orgasm issues. It's very much a testosterone thing. Your energy, your ability to have blood flow in your arteries, your cognition as you get older. Who does not want to have good cognition? Short-term memory loss is very important. Testosterone fights all that. It's just such a huge metabolic issue. The simplest way to understand testosterone is we have men with prostate cancer that has spread, where doctors take away testosterone as a strategy. Those men have heart disease, those men have bellies and fat, those men have high cholesterol and diabetes, those men have low sex drive, those men have cognition problems, and you could just see when you take it away, that's what you get. But we, as we age, take it away slowly. So it's sort of like watching grass grow. You don't really notice how fat you're getting and how lazy you're getting and how you fall asleep so well and how your interest changes. But testosterone is critical, and getting it measured is very essential, and getting it managed in a place that understands how to manage it is really very important.
Wow.
And that's both men and women.
I was going to ask, could you maybe throw in, what are kind of some of the symptoms for the women? Is
everything
it very similar?
I just said. It's
just the same thing, right?
Yeah,
I'm not hitting the golf ball as far. That does worry me a little bit.
You should be at your age. You have no excuse. You need to play more.
But the point is, it's the hidden hormone of women. Because when you think of women, you say estrogen and progesterone. For whatever reason, you don't talk about testosterone. But testosterone has an essential role to the health of a woman's genitals. We just talked of a woman, I said to you, who had sexual pain, one of the earlier discussions. Giving women testosterone stops sexual pain in more than half of the women. So the opening to the area of genital use is a testosterone-dependent opening.
So I think the testosterone is in women is the stickiness. So, why you want to hug your husband's significant other,
the cuddle bug.
So if you've lost that interest, things. You may have a low testosterone. So how does one get tested for low testosterone?
So it's not very complicated. You have to have the symptoms, and you have to have a blood test that defines it to be abnormal. So in our office, we actually have a whole bunch of blood tests that we get, but it's really a blood test that defines not the total component and not the bound component, but that component which is unbound, so it can do the work. Roughly that's 2% of your total amount, and I don't want to make this complicated, but just reliance upon the total test won't get you where you need to go. You really need to measure what we call the free component, and that has to be in the normal range.
And what about replacement? Someone, when someone has what they call the andropause, and they have the low testosterone, and they measure low, and they now have to be replaced. What are their choices for testosterone replacement?
So it's good news and bad news. The bad news is for women, there's no FDA-approved version of testosterone. So for women, you have to go outside and use typically a male version approved and use it at 10% the dose. The good news for men is there's multiple products, and we define them as one that is required daily, And we have, for example, Androgel, Fortesta, Axiron, Testum as classic gels, or called topical or transdermals through the skin. We have intramuscular testosterone, where you do that for each week. And then we have this pellet form, also FDA approved, called Testapel, which gets you to 4 to 6 months of one administration. Your testosterone values are healthy for 4 to 6 months. So we have all these choices for men. So what we do for women is we essentially use these agents, but use them at 1/10 the dose. So a classic male is around 400 or 500. A classic woman is 40 to 50 in the units that we measure testosterone.
So you hear a lot about, testosterone is bad, you know, it causes prostate cancer. Is that a real phenomenon?
That is not a real phenomenon. And take that away. That's a myth. Testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. I'll just give you the biggest problem with the myth is let me ask you a question back so we can interact.
Sure.
When is the man the highest in testosterone?
Well, when you're 20, 21.
And what is when is the likelihood a man in his life will get prostate cancer? When his testosterone is the highest or the lowest?
When it's the highest.
No, lowest.
Well, it's the lowest because he gets it when he's older.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's no relation of testosterone to prostate cancer. I think the way to think of this is prostate, like bone, like blood vessels, like erectile tissue, is, of course, dependent upon the value of testosterone. But there's a thing called saturation. So, you know, there's a certain amount that grows. And then after you get beyond that point of testosterone, there's no more influence. It's fully saturated. So the prostate gets fully saturated. And going, say, from a testosterone of 200 to 300 to 400 to 500, there's lots of publications showing you don't change any more growth of what the prostate actually puts out. So it's fully saturated. It's not there are other benefits you get from testosterone. So to deny, because of your fear of prostate cancer, is almost the equivalent of to deny this whole issue with women and breast cancer and estrogen. But we'll get to that in another conversation, because the fear of estrogen and breast cancer and our conversation of testosterone and prostate cancer, it's the same conversation. It's absolutely not. It's totally a myth.
Actually, there's a study which was done at University of San Diego called the Rancho Bernardo study.
Yes.
Where they looked at, followed men from age 50 through 80, and they divided them into quartiles with the highest to the lowest testosterone levels. And then they found that the men in the lowest quartile, the lowest 25%, had an increased risk of death of all causes, right, like 25-30%.
Oh, wow.
Mortality and morbidity is lessened with higher testosterone.
Yeah, so I think I agree with you that it's probably a fallacy that testosterone and prostate cancer are linked. That said, we still recommend measuring PSAs if you're on testosterone and looking at for the rate of rise and increase in absolute values. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with anything that you and the patient agree is going to be good and monitoring safely and everybody having comfort. At the end of the day, this is about that. This is you feeling comfortable with your sex life and maximizing it without taking any risks. If people have fears, we have to respect their fears. But there are data where they don't have to have fears, and we do our bit, which is why we have our three-hour visits, so we can show data and have conversations and deal with it more rationally.
You know, there's an expression. Oh, Kendra, go ask your question. I got more questions than Kendra. Go ahead. You hit it.
Well, we're talking about, obviously, you were saying that when you get too much testosterone, it doesn't make too much of a change. But
I think Larry has too much testosterone. Yeah, what do you think? Yeah.
But isn't there
such thing? I took my shot yesterday.
Too much of a good thing. I mean, in women, that would change, right? Like if you give women too much testosterone, you would see something that's unhealthy, right? Isn't
that
kind of
one? So the point is, we have women who are actually uncomfortable in women and who would prefer to be men. So mm-hmm. we would give them testosterone at a male dose. But for women who want to be improved for their own life and want mm-hmm. to remain women, we have values that we keep them at their values. Okay. I mean, this is not complicated. You have a need for a therapy. Mm-hmm. You provide the therapy and you monitor the safety of that with a blood test. Mm-hmm. So if it gets too high, you cut it back. But I mean, the point is we monitor it. It's not done where I'll see you in 3 years, Mrs. Jones.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to see her every 3 months for a period of time until we realize where she needs and what she.
So you have a relationship with your patients.
Everyone.
Where you're
They're
learning.
Family. Okay. They're all family. After 3 hours, everybody.
I like that.
Family.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Sit down for a cup of coffee. So awesome. All right. Well, audience out there, stay with us. We have more questions to ask Dr. Goldstein and some good information on its way. So stay tuned. And we'll be right back.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com, or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And our special guest today is Dr. Goldstein, as we're talking about sexual health.
That is
what we're talking about.
Sexual health.
Sexual health. So we've been focusing a lot on, obviously, men. The world knows that, you know, there are issues like low testosterone or erectile dysfunction. But really, Dr. Goldstein, what about women? What's out there for women?
So I think just looking two steps backwards, there are more women who mm-hmm. would respond that their sex lives are not in good function than men.
Probably.
So it's a little ironic and a little sad that women who have more sexual problems get less care and less attention.
Yes.
But 2013, is the year of the woman.
The year of the woman. I like it.
Because there will be a drug for women with low sexual interest. And the technical term is HSDD, hypoactive sexual desire disorder, meaning low sexual interest, is been researched and found to have all kinds of reasons. But one of the reasons, beyond the psychology and the musculoskeletal, is there's a chemical brain imbalance. Like a chemical brain imbalance that causes Parkinson's or a chemical brain imbalance that causes depression, mm-hmm. there's a chemical brain imbalance that causes low sexual interest. And this drug will reverse the chemical brain imbalance, much like an antidepressant reverses the chemical imbalance and relieves depression. This will relieve that woman of having low sexual interest. So it's a fabulous, fabulous new drug.
Now, what about women that are, say, postmenopausal?
Yeah, so this drug is actually designed for premenopausal women. My
okay.
suspicion is that since they've already done studies of this premenopausal drug in postmenopausal women, mm-hmm. that probably a lot of women with low interest will use it off-label or get it prescribed by physicians in an off-label context, and will mm-hmm. do more and more studies in postmenopausal women. But postmenopausal women have a whole host of issues, interest being
Yay.
One of them. You know, their arousal often is not correct. Their ability to have orgasm is not correct. Their hormones are off, so they sometimes have pain and discomfort during the act. We see tons of women in their menopause. You know, the thing is, if you see men with erectile dysfunction, the classic mm-hmm. age of that person is in their 60s, so their partners are in menopause. It seems so odd to treat the men, restore their sexual function, and then the sexual, then there's no sexuality going to happen if the woman's not in a good place. So getting the couple cared for is perfect.
What about hormonal issues in women, both pre- and post-menopausal? Does that play a part in their sexual life?
Oh, huge. And we've sort of talked about it when we did the men, saying that as men age, if they want to be active, if they want to have good muscle tone and cognition and good blood vessel control, men need to have testosterone. So women need a little more. Women need testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. So as women age, the trifecta, we get them on that. We keep their values at just basically sufficient values, so there's limited risk and great benefit. We actually do 5 things for all menopausal women. We give them systemic testosterone, systemic estrogen, systemic progesterone, and we put a cream at the opening where you need to have testosterone and a cream inside the vagina to keep it lubricated. So they actually do 5 things for menopausal women. Fabulous results. Really, no safety concerns as long as this thing is monitored. We use what's called biologically identical hormones. So the word biologically identical means that the chemical structure of the hormone is exactly as it was made in the woman's ovary.
Oh, wow.
As opposed to, you know, a drug company that added different subgroups, and those are called SERMs or SARMs, selective estrogen receptor modulator or selective androgen receptor modulator. We prefer biologically identical. So we actually know what it does, and we can record it in the bloodstream and see what the woman is doing. It's so important to bring the conversation to the couple.
Right.
We have men who have prostate cancer.
Right.
And we have men who get either surgery for their prostate cancer or get a hormonal treatment for their prostate cancer or get a radiation treatment for their prostate cancer. And we did a study to address what happens to the woman's sexuality in this population of men who are treated. And the fact is women didn't get any treatment because they don't really have prostates or prostate cancer.
Right.
The fact is over 2 out of 3 women's sexual lives became negatively impacted by the treatment that the men had. And it only goes to show you that this is a true couples phenomenon. And if the man has poor sexual function, the woman will have poor sexual function. Her interest mm-hmm. will fall, her orgasmic abilities will fall. And
you have to
treat the couple. And right now, if there is any treatment, it's focused on the men. And of course, that will change. 2013,
right.
We'll have a drug.
Right. And from that perspective, I mean, say you are treating the men right now. So you'd think, all right, if they're all excited and good to go for it, that would help the women. But it's more emotional, right? Is that kind of what you're coming from?
No, I think the point I'm coming from is that it could be emotional, but it could be that the emotional is not the primary cause, but a secondary cause to a biologic thing that's hurting them. And they become secondarily sad or depressed or withdrawn because they have a physical lack of testosterone or they have a endometrial implant that's causing them pain or something. So the point is, it really needs to be seen in a multidisciplinary context where time is not a huge factor and we could iron out and get diagnoses. You need to have explanations for the various problems.
You know, it could be as simple as someone, the woman being hypothyroid and that affecting their sexual health. So do you look at thyroid function?
Thyroid is part of everything we do. We also measure a blood test called prolactin. I just had a woman, prolactin level is over 200. And we gave her medicine, the prolactin went away, and her whole sex life just came back. Just bango, it was amazing.
What is that?
Prolactin is, so when a woman is pregnant, there's a hormone release that's prolactation, or the name is prolactin.
Okay.
And it's made in the pituitary gland, and there can be a tumor of the pituitary gland that makes prolactin without the person's permission.
Okay.
And basically it makes women depressed and sad, their testosterone low. They're sort of preparing for lactation. But
is that how you feel? Wait, is that how you feel before you really?
Well, you're protected.
Is that something I've got to look
forward
to? You
don't want to be sexual during lactation. You want to protect the child. Your energy needs to be on the child. So
you're in some big changes. That's for another show.
I know. I've got a couple years before that happens, but still, wow.
But my point is there are all kinds of cool biologic explanations. And that's why the diagnosis word keeps coming back to my mouth. Mm-hmm. It's really important to explain why a person has a sexual problem, not just to accept it and say, oh, it must be in my head or must be because I'm tired. You know, that's not necessarily the answer.
I think in our culture, it used to be, well, you're old now, and there's no longer for you to, you know, have babies, so there's no longer to be sexually active. I mean, that paradigm right. is out.
Wait, you guys are both in my office, and there was a gentleman who wanted surgery to improve his function, and he was in his 70s. And
hey, he didn't look it, by
he didn't
way.
Look
I was going to
yeah.
say, I didn't see a 70-year-old man in there.
No, because 70-year-old people look 40s now. It's the way it is.
Wow. Huh. So you got a pretty good client base then going on there. We're gonna
have
to.
I mean the fabulous part of our facility is there's nothing in Los Angeles like this. I mean, think of the size of Los Angeles and not have a medical subspecialty. There's nothing in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in Seattle or Oregon or Arizona. Nothing in Las Vegas. You'd think Vegas would have this, wouldn't you think?
Well, there are more. I mean, there's a lot based on fertility, right?
Yeah. So fertility is around.
But you're kind of like before you get to that point, right?
Let's try to solve the other side of it.
Yeah.
A lot of fertility treatments, if you wanted to get into that, to control the woman's ovulation, they give them drugs that stop her from ovulating. Those drugs cause sexual dysfunction. We see huge numbers of infertility treatment women who have sexual problems. Another problem with aging that we should talk about is a lot of women and men are on antidepressant medication as they age. In fact, your drug that you brought up in the news is an actual antidepressant that was this non-hormonal treatment for women's hot flashes. I think we should talk some degree of antidepressants, because whereas they may stop you from being sad and depressed and blue and grumpy and you have more function, you can get out and be human. Mm-hmm. SSRIs, as they're called, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, raise the hormone called serotonin. Those mm-hmm. are the number one chemicals in the brain that stop sexual activity. They stop orgasm, they stop interest, they stop arousal. So the price for some people and being more normal in mood mm-hmm. is to lose their sexual activity. And we have much better ways to affect mood
than
through the antidepressant strategy.
Okay. Well, awesome.
Just to bring that up.
Yeah, no, that's great information.
So earlier in the show, you were talking about bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. My question is, where do you get these hormones? Do you have to go to a compounding pharmacy?
No, you don't. Thank you for bringing that up. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, makes lots of biologically identical. All the testosterones we talked about, they're biologically identical. All the many estrogens and progesterones are biologically identical to get through the FDA. The misnomer is that biologically identical has to come from a compound pharmacy. It's not verified in a compound pharmacy. There's no FDA oversight, and that's a problem.
So you can get these prescribed from FDA-approved regular doctors.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Do you have any recommendation? I mean, what's the best way to take the testosterone? Do you think
it's the choice of the person, a transdermal, if they want to apply it every day, but they're doing it for the rest of their life, and there's 365 days a year. So you're looking at thousands of administrations. There's the intramuscular injection, where you do 52 times in a year, and then there's the pelts, you do just several times in a year. So the person picks and chooses. We're very happy to do what the patient wants.
I want to really thank you for being on the show
today.
Thank
you so much.
And mm-hmm. for our audience, if they wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
They could call San Diego Sexual Medicine, 619-265-8865.
Mm-hmm. And why don't you repeat that one more time for the...
San Diego Sexual Medicine, 619-265-8865.
And Dr. Emder, you've got a website too.
I'm a Healthy Aging Medical Associates, and you can find us on the web, and we'd be happy to get you into the system to staying young, healthy, and vibrant.
Absolutely. And for our audience members out there, thanks so much for tuning in. And Dr. Goldstein, thanks for being here.
Thank
I know our audience is... you know, they're very lucky to have gotten to listen to you today. So
can we have them come back again in the future?
Yeah. Oh, I think we've got more questions. I know. I'm like, wait, I've got something else. So if you do have more questions, please feel free to reach out to them. And if you've got questions for me or Dr. Emder, feel free to email me as well. My email address is kvallone@plumh.com. That's K, V as in Victor, A-L-L-O-N-E, @plumh.com. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. Join Kendra every Saturday morning from 6 to 7 a.m. on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ.